Good afternoon. I had a little bit of trouble here getting everything all set up. It's 4 o'clock. Thanks for, well, it's 1 second to 4 o'clock. Now it's 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, let's see, kind of moving away from more recent and local work, and in this first hour, I'm going to feature two recordings of talks done by my favorite poet. I have played what I'm playing on the show today in the past, but I play it very rarely, and these pieces that I'm going to play today are special to me, so I thought I'd share them this afternoon. So I'm going to feature two recordings of talks done in the first hour by my favorite poet, W.S. Merwin. The first portions of an October 2010 talk he gave at Poets House, and the second, his 2012 TED Talk called Connections, that he delivered in Maui. And in the second hour, I'm featuring another TED Talk, this one in Long Beach, with Elizabeth Gilbert presenting her talk, Your Elusive Creative Genius, and that was back in 2009. Both hours will include other work and information. Well, you should just say information, and a fair amount of music today as well. So, and it is still, it's on crowding 2 minutes after 4 o'clock. And in case you just tuned in, you are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. First, just my usual start of the hour announcement, and it is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but all is played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. So I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and move into the first hour today. Again, in case you tuned in a few seconds late, I'm going to be featuring recordings by poet W.S. Merwin, who lived from 1927 to 2019. I'm just going to play them back to back, but with a brief introduction to him again, just ahead of his 2012 TED Talk, which follows the first piece. And again, that is called Connections. First up, I found a few recorded segments of him to introduce the first piece. A few recorded segments of him in 2010, and specifically on October 21st, 2010, as he was then the new U.S. Poet Laureate. And W.S. Merwin visited with public librarians at in a program called Poets House, a free program in which he spoke about his commitment to the environment and the importance of introducing poetry to children, among other subjects. The venue, again, here, the first in the segment, from their website, and this is a quote, Poets House hosts the most comprehensive open access collection of poetry books in the U.S. Founder of the People's Poetry Gallery, the annual Poets House Showcase of New Poetry Volumes and Poetry in the Branches, a partnership with New York Public Library, and end quote. So that's kind of an introduction to the very first piece you're going to hear. And again, I will introduce the TED Talk right before that airs, so you get a little more information about that as well. But I think I've kind of, have you all geared up for the first piece. So again, these will just air sort of back to back with just my introduction again to the second piece in between. So here we go. And again, this is W.S. Merwin at the Poets House in on October 21st, 2010. Here we go.
You know, I love to find the subject that I think everybody tells lies about. And Man, that's a fascinating subject, what you got one. And animals that people have always told untruths about, you know there's something interesting about them. The fox is an amazing creature. We pay a lot of attention to wolves. The wolves aren't interested in us. They want to know two things about us. Are we prey? No. There's no documented case of a wolf having eaten a human being in North America. After all of the nasty things that have been said about to justify the killing of wolves. The fox, they don't know anything about, you see. The fox is interested in us. The fox is fascinated by us and hangs around and plays tricks on us and does all these things. The fox is the only animal I know that can disappear while you watch it. You look straight at it and all of a sudden it isn't there. They're fascinated by us. They will come over, they'll try to find out about us and peer around us. They come one by one. They fascinate other people. Wonderful nature writer Verlin Klinkenborg, who lives up the Hudson, he writes beautifully about foxes. And Adrian Rich has written a book about foxes, a book of poems, one of which you have upstairs and on a poster. I want to read the book of my poems called The Vixen. The Vixen run, the fox runs all the way through. She's the spirit of the book. And the next to the last poem is called Vixen, and it's entirely addressed to her. Comet of stillness, princess of what is over, high note held without trembling, without voice, without sound, aura of complete darkness, keeper of the kept secrets, of the destroyed stories, the escaped dreams, the sentences never caught in words. Warden of where the river went, touch of its surface, sibyl of the extinguished. Window onto the hidden place and the other time. At the foot of the wall, by the road, patient without waiting, in the full moonlight of autumn, at the hour when I was born, you no longer go out like a flame. At the sight of me, you are still warmer than the moonlight gleaming on you. Even now you are unharmed, even now perfect, as you always have been. Now, when your light paws are running on the breathless night, on the bridge with one end, I remember you. When I have heard you, the soles of my feet have made answer. When I have seen you, I have waked and slipped from the calendars and from the creeds of difference and the contradictions that were my life and all the crumbling fabrications as long as it lasted, until something that we were had ended. When you are no longer anything, let me catch sight of you again going over the wall. And before the garden is extinct and the woods are figures guttering on a screen, let my words find their own places in the silence after the animals. I came to the palms because I wanted to grow indigenous. I wanted to restore Hawaiian rainforest. I learned quickly that only a forest can grow a forest. We don't know how to grow a forest. We will never know how to grow a forest. A forest evolves. Thoreau was the person who knew most about that. Our great prophet, our great American prophet, hero of mine all my life. He wrote about the fact, talking about old growth, you know, how old growth comes to evolve. A forest doesn't sort of begin, all of a sudden you've got a forest. You've got things that gradually turn into a forest, and it may take many centuries for them to arrive at their final stage, and then we come in and cut them down. And you can't put it back, because a forest is not just an odd number of trees growing in proximity to each other. It's a social system as complicated as our own, in which there are all kinds of life depending on each other and relating to each other in ways that we only partially understand. I love it when you say in the branches, you know, because you see yourselves as a great tree, and that's a great image. And imagine a world without trees. where would you be? It's a way of being in the world that we're talking about. That's what the arts are about, and that's why the relation between the arts and life as a whole are simply aspects of the same thing. And I love the idea that you're carrying poetry into the zoos now. I don't know what the animals will make of the poems, but we don't. There's a lot that we don't know. On the last day of the world, I would want to plant a tree. What for? Not for the fruit. The tree that bears the fruit is not the one that was planted. I want the tree that stands in the earth for the first time, with the sun already going down and the water touching its roots in the earth full of the dead, and the clouds passing one by one over its leaves. That's inexplicable, and I think, you know, I think that's marvelous. How do you explain any poem? People say I don't read poetry because I don't understand it. And I think that's because you're coming at it from the wrong end. Children don't skip rope because they understand it. They skip rope because they want to skip rope. When you finish listening to one of the late Schubert sonatas, you don't understand it. That's not why you listen to it. When you do anything that you love doing, you don't do it because you understand it. Understanding is something that comes afterwards, when you can attach words to it and they never come close to it, and all those things are happening. But when you look at Leonardo's Lady with an Ermine, do you understand it? When you look at Vermeer's Girl Pouring Milk from a Pitcher, do you understand the milk from the pitcher? I don't think so. We don't go back to read poetry because we understand it. We go back to it because we love it, and because we hear it. We hear it, and it enters into us. And sometimes, if we're lucky, and one of the marvelous things that I've been hearing in the last few hours here about is your programs with children, and children memorizing things, children loving to memorize things, children being connected with poetry from the very beginning and waking up to it. They're learning, they're picking up things that are going to be part of them for the whole of their lives. You are doing something that is so valuable that even you don't understand how valuable it is. You can't, because it will survive you. And it's just wonderful. I'm just surprised day by day by the way human beings are behaving now. I know we've always done that to some degree, but it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. The viciousness and the negativity and the destructiveness and the indifference to what we're doing, it seems to me to be getting worse all the time. And I think that it's not just even the destruction we're doing to the world and to others, it's what we're doing to ourselves. And I don't know how to say it without seeming to be preaching about it, but I think it seems to me, I don't think anybody's going to pay any attention. I don't think I'm going to change anybody's way of behaving. But the idea of never having bothered to say anything about it seems to me intolerable, too. I want to try to say something about that, and saying what I think the connection is, that the great thing that really distinguishes our species, that we can love and respect about humankind, is not how much smarter than the whales we are, because we may not be smarter than the whales, or how wonderful our language is, because even language is not something unique to us. The amoebas communicate with each other. Or there wouldn't be amoebas around. Life has always been about communication. That's always been there in one form or another. But what we have come to, not only us, we're not the only species that have it, but we're the only species in whom it has developed and taken a position of primacy, is the imagination, the ability to recognize that in the suffering of people dying of AIDS in Africa, or of the whales dying of starvation in the Pacific Ocean, or of any of the species that are being snuffed out, we are not exempt from that. We are part of it. That suffering is our suffering. That is our world that they're leaving. And out of that imagination come, on the one hand, compassion, on the other hand, the arts. And they're all connected to each other. And that the arts somehow is allowing us, reminding us of our kinship with all other life, and with the mortality of other life, the ephemeral, precious nature of every other form of life.
W.S. Merwin was born September 30th, 1927, and died March 15th, 2019. And the audio you're going to hear is from the video. It's a 2012 TEDx talk held in Maui, featuring, again, W.S. Merwin. And here is, this is a quote, these are the comments directly from their website. William S. Merwin has become one of the most widely read and honored poets of our time. In an illustrious career spanning six decades and counting, Merwin has received many honors, including the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1971 and 2009, the Tanning Prize, one of the highest honors bestowed by the Academy of American Poets, and the Golden Wreath of the Struga Poetry Evenings. In 2010, he was appointed United States Poet Laureate. Merwin is also a translator, gardener, and environmental activist. For nearly 30 years, he has lived in Maui in a home he designed and helped build. Surrounded by acres that erosion, logging, and toxic agricultural practices had depleted, he lovingly restored the land, transforming it into one of the most comprehensive palm forests in the world, a future sanctuary called the Merwin Conservancy. And again, this was recorded at TEDx Maui, held on January 22nd, 2012 at the Maui Arts and Cultural Center. My own short statement before I heard this, and that's the end of that quote, obviously. W.S. Merwin has been one of my favorite poets since I first discovered him in the early 1990s. And by favorite, I mean far and away. The last thing I'll say before I bring up his talk and reading is that he and his work literally changed my life. And not just my writing or reading life, but the full of it. So with that, here is W.S. Merwin. Here we go.
Hello. What I really want to talk about is connections, and not connections you might have thought of necessarily, but various kinds. And I want to start and end with poems. So brace yourselves if you've never listened to poet readings. I mean, it may not be quite what you expected. You might even like it. Let me see. I do need to have my glasses to see something up here. One of the things is, you know, is the connection. I was absolutely shaken by Lisa Christine's extraordinary presentation earlier. And this one of the connections one needs to question is, what's the relation between poetry and something like that? What's the relation between poetry and what's happening to the earth and what we are doing to every other species of life on earth at this time? What is the relation between our ability to speak, if we can speak, and the imagination and poetry? There are simple answers that people will immediately propose to you, and there are lots of people who say, oh, you know, and I've heard people in high places, I've been told by them, that poets should stay out of politics, as they like to put it. I think, well, I can quite see why you would like that to be so, but that's not a good reason for staying out of politics. It's a temptation. But there was a great French philosopher and activist, Albert Camus, who won the Nobel Prize 45 years ago or so, and died at 48 in a car accident. An amazing man. He said at one point, very simple, those of us who can speak have a responsibility to say something for those of us who can't. And I think that's true of any talent that we have. We don't need to have to turn into propagandists. That's the real danger, because it ruins the whole thing. You become predictable. But you don't ever turn off the imagination from dealing with those things. And my other great model that I have always in mind is one of the very greatest poets who ever lived was Dante. And Dante never gave up on speaking of the world as it was, and the world and human nature as it is. And that meant speaking about political events of his time too, and great anger. So there is a connection there. I don't think there's ever a formula for these things. And I think that the mistake is to expect there to be some neat formula. And if you're doing it right, you're a good boy. If you're not doing it right, you're messing up, you know? You're being irresponsible. I don't think that's true at all. I think that the more clearly one pays attention to whatever talent one has, and everybody has a talent, the more clearly one pays attention to it, the answer is going to come out of itself. What is the connection between what I perceive, what I have, what I can do, and the world itself? And we're surrounded by people who never want to consider that. Some of them are in high political positions too, as you know. So I want to begin by reading two poems which are a little bit, they're different in kind from each other, but I think you'll see what the connection is. The one is called, it's a quite recent poem called Convenience. We were not made in its image, but from the beginning we believed in it. Not for the pure appeasement of hunger, but for its availability. It could command our devotion beyond question and without our consent. And by whatever name we have called it, in its name love has been set aside, unmeasured time has been devoted to it, forests have been erased and rivers poisoned, and truth has been relegated for it. Wars have been sanctified by it. We believe that we have a right to it, even though it belongs to no one. We carry a way back to it everywhere. We are sure that it is saving something. We consider it our personal savior. All we have to pay for it is ourselves. The other of these two first poems is, I'll make no explanation for, I think it'll do that itself. It's called The Chain to Her Leg. And I'd like to dedicate the reading to Lisa. As a sort of small connection to what she's doing. If we forget Topsy, Topsy remembers. When we forget her mother gunned down in the forest and forget who killed her and to whom they sold the tusks, the feet, the good parts, and how they died and where and what became of their children and what happened to the forest, Topsy remembers. When we forget how the wires were fastened on her feet in the name of the experiment the first time, and how she smoldered and shuddered there with them all watching but did not die. When we forget the lit cigarette the last laugh gave her, lit end first, as though it were a peanut, for which joke she killed him, we will not see home again. When we forget the circus, the tickets to see her die in the name of progress and Edison and the electric chair, the mushroom cloud will go up over the desert where the Enola Gay will take off after the chaplain's blessing. The smoke from the Black Mesa's power plants will be visible from the moon. The forests will be gone. The extinctions will accelerate. The polar bears will float farther and farther away and off to the edge of the world. The Topsy remembers. I think you see the connection between those and the risk of writing out of anger. The anger about Topsy is something that I probably began in me when I was 6 or 7 years old and learned the story. And it's still the same right there now as I tell you this from the platform. And we forget Topsy. But what Topsy remembers is what we're losing, and that's we are what Topsy remembers. I want to make the move to this is not the only possible attitude. We need convenience. We need to have enough money to put food on the table for the family. We need to get to work. We need to live in the world that we live in. And it requires convenience. It does not require the 7 houses that Dick Cheney owns or some of the money that is that some of the people who are vying for public office now have made over the few years. I don't think we need anything like that amount of money. So if we devote our lives to that, that's convenience. That's what we're talking about. But that's not the only possible attitude. And I want to talk to you about the other side of it. And I want to start by quoting one of the very great scientific minds of the past century, Albert Einstein. We had mutual friends when I was in the university because it was the same university. And I was very, very interested in that man, the wonderful man. He said quite late in his life, after all that we know, what is important is the sense of wonder. He said, if we lose the sense of wonder, we've lost all the rest of it. So that's the other side. That's peripheral to the economy, that's peripheral to how you do all of these things that the advertisements are urging you to do. That's not part of that at all. That's something more closely related to the legend when Shakyamuni looked up from under the Bodhi tree and saw the morning star. What did he see? He didn't see a political program. Or he didn't see a way of earning $1 million fast. He said, now I see that I and all living creatures are awake together. We're awake at the same time. We share the same moment of waking. That's the basis of that whole thing, and that's the basis of the imagination. I think the imagination is what is valuable about our species. We may not be the smartest species, and we certainly aren't the nicest in a lot of ways, But the imagination, which is there in what he said and what Albert Einstein is talking about, is not about convenience. It's about something far deeper and more wonderful than that. To quote Blake again, as Dr. Greenberg ended by doing, Blake, in a letter to one of his patrons, said, "That man, that tree which fills me with tears of joy, to another person is simply a green object that gets in his way." He said, by such a person I will not set my principles, he said. But he said, to the man of imagination, the tree is nature, and nature is the imagination. The opposite attitude is to realize that we are here with every single living thing, and if we do what the Book of Genesis says we should do, which is to have dominion over the rest of life, it's a suicidal point of view. The other one is the attitude of imagination. The attitude of imagination is not just writing poetry or writing anything, but it's the basis of compassion, of language, of being able to say anything, of being able to express anything, of being able to recognize, not recognize in the sense of information, but recognize in the sense of connection. And we have both of those things going on in us all the time, but the economy is all based toward the one, and I want to say, don't ever forget the other, because the other one is what you really are. And so I want to pass to first reading two other kinds of poems, two short poems. They're both quite recent. First one is a love poem, which they ought to exist. By the way, I started by saying that almost all political poems are bad. Perfectly true. Almost all love poems are bad, but I mean, it's not a reason not to write love poems. Late spring. Coming into the high room again after years, after oceans and shadows of hills and the sounds of lies, after losses and feet on stairs, after looking and mistakes and forgetting, turning there thinking to find no one except those I knew, finally I saw you sitting in white, already waiting. You of whom I had heard with my own ears since the beginning, for whom more than once I had opened the door, believing you were not far. That's a poem to my wife, Paula, who's here. The last poem, and I think I've said enough about the connection between the two kinds of poems in this. This is an even more recent poem. It's one of the last poems in the last published book. It's called Rainlight. All day the stars watch from long ago. My mother said, "I am going now. When you are alone, you will be all right. Whether or not you know, you will know. Look at the old house in the dawn rain. All the flowers are forms of water. The sun reminds them through a white cloud, touches the patchwork spread on the hill, the washed colors of the afterlife that lived there long before you were born. See how they wake without a question. even though the whole world is burning. Thank you.
Field of time. the thrasher comes, I'll be stuck in the sun like the dinosaurs in shrines. But I'll know the time has come to give what's mine.
Before the music, W.S. Merwin in the audio portion of a recorded TEDx talk at the Maui Arts and Cultural Center on January 22nd, 2012. Following that, you heard, of course, Neil Young with Crazy Horse off of their Russ Never Sleeps album, and 1979 that came out, and you heard the song Thrasher.
And before that, you heard again from the Poet's House, a few segments that were caught and aired on and recorded that I managed to find. And so I aired all of that coming up to this. And it is about 42 minutes after 4 o'clock. You have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC. Tell you what, I probably should do this now, and we'll be right back.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
What quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
Late in the 1970s, four Kingston women got together to discuss the idea of creating a community house, a place where grassroots organizations, families, and groups could gather, a place where food could be prepared and shared, new skills could be learned, and lively discussion could be encouraged. For over 30 years, Kingston Community House has provided low-cost meeting space for hundreds of groups, allowing people to come together to learn from one another, share resources, and trade skills. As it becomes safe once again to gather in person, we look forward to providing the Kingston community with a comfortable and convenient place to reconnect with one another. Located in downtown Kingston, we operate 7 days a week. For more information on Kingston Community House and how to book, please visit kingstoncommunityhouse.org.
Mornings from 8 to 10 on the one. the only CFRC 101.9 FM.
And again, you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock, and we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And just a quick reminder that every week, both hours of this show are uploaded to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Will remain there for 3 years. And I do have some time today. I am going to play another song at the end of the hour, just a sneak peek. It's going to be an old Cowboy Junkie song. Anyway, I'll be doing that to lead us into the second hour today, but I do have some time to share a few calls for submissions that are, three of them it looks like, are very soon to expire. And in fact, one is expiring today, so that's how close it is. And then I'm going to also share a few upcoming events, announcements of upcoming events as well. To take us into that final song for this hour. And I'm going to have a bit of kind of doing the same thing in the second hour, another TED Talk and a bit of music and some sharing some more events, maybe calls for submissions as well, but we'll see. Anyway, let's do this because these are expiring very quickly at this point. It's Arc Poetries. This is the one that expires the last day of every month, so you hear me talking about it all the time here. But it is Arc Poetry Magazine's Award of Awesomeness. Their deadline, again, is the last day of the month. It's open to everyone. The prize, 50% of prize money raised and a rare vintage award item. You can get the link I'm going to give you the link for this month's prompt, and everything you need is in there. It's ARC, and that's ARC, arcpoetry.ca/contest/ARC Award of Awesomeness. And again, their deadline is, I'm assuming, midnight tonight, so you still have a few hours to get that off to them. Coming up, deadline tomorrow, February 1st, again through ARC, and again, that is ARC. It's the ARC Poem of the Year Award, and it's an annual contest, obviously. It offers $5,000 for the winning poem, $500 for honorable mention, $250 for Reader's Choice selection, and it says all 10 to 12 shortlisted poems receive paid publication in ARC and online. Details are at, again, arcpoetry.ca/contest/poem of the year. Again, that deadline is tomorrow, February 1st. And then on Sunday, there's another deadline, Sunday, February 2nd. This is the Master's Review Winter Short Story Award for New Writers. And it says this contest runs until February 2nd. And is open to any writer who has not published a novel or memoir with a major press. They are looking for unpublished fiction or creative nonfiction, 600 words max. First prize is $3,000, publication and agency review. Second and third place, $300 and $200, and online publication and still agency review. I'm going to give you the link for the guidelines and details, mastersreview.com/winter-short-story-award-for-new-writers. And again, that deadline is February 2nd. I've got a couple more coming up. I'm going to do two of these because one of them is at least the last one is local as well. So this is Monday, February 17th, so I'm buying you a little more time with this one. Short prose competition. It's the Writers Union of Canada And this is for emerging writers. The Writers Union of Canada presents its 32nd annual short prose competition for emerging writers. It says unpublished works of fiction or nonfiction, 2,500 word max. Winner receives $2,500. And the entries of the winner and 11 finalists will be submitted to 3 Canadian magazines for consideration. So there you go. Excuse me. Sorry, I had to sneeze. I didn't want to do that on the air. The website for that, to send it off to www. I mean, let's just do this. The guidelines and everything you need to know, go to www.writersunion.ca/prose-competition. And then coming up, the thing that's local is coming up for the deadline to apply for the 2025 TK Fringe Festival submissions is open, and the deadline to apply is Friday, February 21st at 8 p.m. If I didn't already give that date, but that's when it is. Just a brief thing about a brief blurb about the festival. The Kick and Push Festival is a conventional arts festival in that it uses a jury selection process to choose its artists. Theatre Kingston was chosen by them to run TK Fringe. This festival's several plays each year are chosen first by lottery and as billed as unjuried, uncurated, unboring. And that's all quote. Learn more, www.theatrekingston.com/about-the-TK-Fringe. And then also for the call and details, go to www.theatrekingston.com, TK Fringe 2025. So there are some calls that are quickly coming up and some that you have a little bit of time for. Let's move into some events that are coming up. Both in Kingston and in the surrounding area. Get my pages to work here. Here we go. Yeah, need to go one more, I think. Oh, coming up this Sunday, this is not a local, but it's in Hamilton. So I do have some listeners out that way. Lit Live runs at the Staircase Cafe and Theater on usually the first Sunday evening of each month, September through June. So the doors pay what you can. They do suggest $5 to $10. Go to their Facebook page, www.facebook.com/LitLive. Reading series. You don't need to know all that. Just put in Lit Live Reading Series in their line, their search engine or their search bar, and it will take you right to the page. Anyway, details, all the details will be there. So that's the best thing I can do. Again, that's coming up Sunday, February 2nd at 7 p.m. And trying to coordinate everything here and got too many pages covering up too many other pages. See how much time I've got here. I've got a couple of minutes, or it looks like a minute or so. I will have plenty of time in the second hour to do this, to continue this too. But I will mention that there are 3 events coming up Tuesday evening. One of them is in Toronto. It's the Write On Right Now series. Go to their Facebook page. Again, Write On Right Now, and that's WRITE in both cases. That's at the Bampot House of Tea, and that's Tuesday, February 4th, 7 to 9 p.m. First Tuesday Muse is in Madoc with host TJ Best at Finn's Pub and Patio. It's 231 Durham Street. That's, again, Tuesday, February 4th, 7 to 9. And then here in Kingston, Hour and the Journey Continues, monthly open mic reading at the Cafe, 303 Montreal Street. It is coming up February 4th, 7 to 9, 15 p.m., doors at 6:30. So I hope you can make it to that. Again, I'd like to thank all of you for having tuned in to the first hour today. I'm going to have a lot more events to share with you in the second hour. But to take us there, one of my favorite albums, still, I think it came out in 1988 or something like that. Love Margo Timmons' voice, vocals. Here's a song called 200 Miles, Cowboy Junkies, off of the Trinity Sessions album. Get it queued up here. Here we go.
Traveled hard before, and I